Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Zillennial Canon Oscar special. This is Zillennial Canon. I'm Kira.
Kira, you missed it. Welcome back to Marty Wolf Pictures. Please hold.
Well, this is the Oscar special, though.
This is the Oscar special, and Kira did have a really great idea for another Oscar hopeful correlated episode that I won't reveal. Although if I'm willing to bet, it may also release this month, so I don't want to spoil it. Maybe if I can plan this correctly, if God wills it, we can still do it.
I'm sure he'll be trying again for an Oscar really hard very soon. So no matter when we do that episode, we can discuss his narrative arc of
God.
Oscar race.
I genuinely not to like make this like quasi about that secret movie, but I genuinely really want to rewatch that movie because that movie is absurd. Like it's so funny. I really want to.
I think about it every single day of my life. I'm not even joking.
I wish like, that was me.
Every single day, I think about it.
Yeah, we're gonna do that, but I think I'll say by the end of April, that can be a promise. By the end of April, mm-hmm. we will have that episode out, and don't worry, you'll know it when you see it. It's crazy.
Based on the context clues of somebody trying to get an Oscar, and when you see the most insane out of left field movie pop up into your feed, that's when you know that's the one that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's one of those, God, before, at the expense of going on about it before we even get to that episode, that's one of those movies, people that don't know everyone's just like, what the fuck are they talking about? This movie about the Oscar hopeful, it's like one of those movies that's not really, it's not a kid's movie at all. It's purely an adult movie, but it's also like, totally came out in the Z canon timeline. And it is just so weird and kind of made for nobody. I don't even know if it did well at the box office. Had a funny kind of, this may give it away, has like kind of a funny continuation. And I won't explain
in
how
my mind does, specifically
in Kira's mind, but also literally has a quasi sequel that I will not elaborate on just for whatever illusion I can keep up. But yeah, what a weird movie. And the guest that I'm trying to get on for it has sworn to me that he has to come on for it, so I'm trying to make that happen. But anyways, before we get ahead of ourselves, we're doing Big Fat Liar, and mm-hmm. Kira, I think Zillennial canon experts, purists will say, now wait a minute, Kieran Adam, didn't you cover Big Fat Liar in 2019? And to that I say, yes, but here's the thing. Sometimes you have to redo something. Sometimes you have to go back and reanalyze a masterpiece, because art is eternal, I think. And criticism is never fully finished. Analysis is never fully done. And in the case of Sean Levy's Big Fat Liar, I think that is purely the case.
The thing is with Big Fat Liar is that I just want to be watching it every second of every day. Like, I watched this like a month ago, and I still want to watch it. Like, I just finished watching it like half an hour ago, and I still want to watch it again.
Yeah, and you know, to your point, when we were trying to decide like a you know, an Oscar related movie for the upcoming Oscars this weekend, because we're recording this on Tuesday, March 5th, you know, I mean, obviously The Holdovers isn't going to win Best Picture or anything, but Paul Giamatti is really having a moment right now. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice to see, because I've always loved Paul Giamatti. I think he's one of the best that we've ever had. But this is like one that we always go back to, and not just because it is the one we saw as like kids, but it's also like one of his only kind of ventures into this kind of film. Like, he hasn't done a lot of like family fare, but the great thing about this movie, and especially his performance, is that it doesn't feel like A-list prestige actor in a kids movie, like trapped in a kids movie, he entirely just does his thing. Like, he doesn't compromise. He gives a legit performance in this movie, and that's why I think it's like a worthy Oscar, you know, episode to have, because it's so fucking good. I love this movie.
Mm-hmm. And it's also very funny because in his Oscar campaigning, he has addressed this movie like twice. He talked about it. Was the Vanity Fair, like, you know, when people are like, they talk about each of their performances through their career. That was, yeah, I mean, this Oscar season, I think.
Yeah. Well, the one that I posted it on my Twitter, but he was on Mark Maron's podcast. And it was so funny because I listened to that full episode. Great episode, by the way. If you want to listen to Mr. Giamatti nerd out with Mark Maron, it's great. It's so fun. But yeah, he basically goes off about how when he was a kid, he saw Paris, Texas, and it really like fucked with him because he just was weirded out by it. And then he like rediscovered it as an adult, and he was like, "Wow, this is like beautiful." And then Mark Maron said, "Wouldn't it be funny if Big Fat Liar was like that for kids?" And like,
he said, you know, like Blue Velvet also.
Yeah, Blue Velvet is also up there. Like, he said like a few different ones, but like Eraserhead, I think he mentioned. But like, yeah, but it was funny because Maron was like, it would be funny if Big Fat Liar was that to someone who saw it as a kid. They were kind of fucked up by it, and then they revitalized it in their 20s and were like still perplexed by it and still moved by it. And to which I responded, check out Zillennial Canon, because that's our entire personality.
yeah.
So I did get to show this to my girlfriend Victoria for the first time. She had never seen it, which was fun because I don't know, I didn't really talk to her about why she never saw it. I guess she just, I guess in the grand scheme of things, this isn't really like a huge movie. It's just kind of like a movie that if you saw it, you loved it, but it's not like Shrek or anything, you know. Like, there are like a big chunk of people in the Z canon zeitgeist that didn't see this movie. But she loved it. She thought it was like, she like five times throughout it, she went, "This is awesome." And I went, and it's like, yeah, it holds up even to like new viewers. I think it's, I don't know. It's pretty reliable as far as that goes.
Yeah. The thing is about this movie is that it has jokes and the jokes work.
Yeah.
Like it's not just like slapsticky like fart humor. There are no farts in this movie. If there were, they'd still be funny, but there's no fart or poop humor except for the one time that the bully was like, "I clogged your toilet." That was really funny.
That was funny.
But
yeah,
like they literally make jokes about like Steven Soderbergh, like Roger Ebert, like, and then you got the classic like Paul Giamatti just being a little bitch, like "Sir, I think we just hit a kid. I'm on the phone."
I'm on the phone.
I sincerely think, and like, I haven't seen a lot of Paul Giamatti performances. Like, I'll be honest, like, I really have not seen a lot. I think this is his best performance.
I think, unironically, it's up there. I wouldn't say it's his absolute best, as much as I would love to be that person. Like, I still think The Holdovers is pretty amazing. I think Sideways is great. You know, he's just an immensely talented performer. But again, this goes back to what I was saying, you know, at the beginning, is that he does the thing where so many actors of his, you know, prestige often get, you know, cast in these kind of movies and they just kind of look miserable, and they kind of look, or almost like not even miserable, but just kind of like, a little bit bored by it. They just kind of go with the flow. They read the lines and, you know, they call it a day. Not the case for Mr. Giamatti in this movie. His performance as Marty Wolf is so funny and so quick and so like captivating. And I don't say that lightly. Like, that's not me trying to be like, "Oh, he's calling the kid movie captivating." Like, it's legitimately like lightning in a bottle, like comedic timing. It's so quick and so precise. And he truly feels like unpredictable. Like, you don't know what the fuck this guy is going to do next. And it's so funny because he's just beefing with this 14-year-old, and the movie plays it 100% straight. Like, I mean, yeah, they like joke about it, but like, he does have like legit beef with this kid, and it's like funny to see it play out. Before I go any further, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, and it's at the very top. It tries to say, if you were looking for the film Big Liar in China, see the Nixon page. So I guess in China, the Nixon Oliver Stone movie is called Big Liar. And I guess enough people have watched the Big Fat Liar page that they had to make a note about it. So so I guess if you're listening to this podcast expecting someone to talk about Oliver Stone's Nixon, I'm sorry, you're on the wrong podcast. So let's see. I was looking at this earlier, it made me laugh. Underneath the cast list, it says Frankie Muniz as Jason Shepard, a 14-year-old compulsive liar and slacker, which is, like, just a funny, like, log line.
Damn, they really dragged him there.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, this movie is just, I mean, I feel like we definitely talked about this the first time we covered it, but this is a movie that I remember watching at a very young age. Like super young. Like I remember I probably got it. I think I was too young to see it in theaters, if memory serves me right, but I definitely had the VHS of this movie as a kid. And I watched it like a billion times. Like I just like, there's something about it that just instantly got to me. Like it was just maybe half of it's just the fact that it's a really fun, cool kids movie. And it had Amanda Bynes, who I loved from Amanda's Show and all that as a kid. And also like, you know, just appearing in other Nickelodeon things here and there. But also like Frankie Muniz, because I grew up watching Malcolm in the Middle and like Agent Cody Banks and all that stuff. So, you know, just all around, like it had enough there. But on the other end of it, and I think, you know, Kira agrees with me on this one, is that it, the love of movies for this movie is like so like infectious. And like when you're a kid watching this, you're just kind of like, it just like, it really makes you, if it hits you the right way, it kind of gets you like enamored by the craft of making movies, which is funny to say about Big Fat Liar, but it was absolutely true for me. I just like, I was so obsessed with film sets ever since I saw this movie. Like I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I genuinely have to thank this movie for me having any kind of interest in like the behind the scenes, like making of movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny to say, but it's true.
No, yeah, I totally get that. And, like, I feel like anybody who I've, like, talked to about this movie, like, brings that up. Like, the idea of walking around on, like, a studio lot and stuff. And, like, when people are in, like, wacky costumes, like, just walking around, like, on, like, a studio lot. It's, like, even just, like, people, like, at, like, work and stuff. Like, we'll say, like, if anything is said about Big Fat Liar, we'll say something about, like, the props room, the costume room, like, the movie set. Personally, I love, like, Universal Studios Hollywood, and, like, this is the most Universal Studios movie. Like, I would put this in the same realm as, like, Spielberg movies, like, the most Universal Studios movie, because it takes place on the tram tour, like, a large section of it, and I love the tram tour so much, and I have a Letterboxd list called Theme Park, and it's just movies that make me feel... Like, it's not movies that are theme park rides, but it's movies that make me feel the same way that theme parks make me feel. Mm-hmm. And the only two movies on it right now are this movie and Tenet. I can't think of anything else.
I feel like this one is just like... Yeah, I mean, it does that also, like, where it has a kind of a theme park quality to it. Like, one of my favorite, like... shots is just like every time it cuts to Amanda Bynes like laying on the DeLorean, I'm like, yeah, like this is awesome. Like, because I mean, I and around the same time when I was a kid, I was probably watching Back to the Future for the first time, so like I had definitely recently seen The Mummy. You can see like the mummy set in the background here. I loved Batman and Robin when I was a kid. I know those pink apes anywhere that he, when he walks into the set, that's from Batman and Robin. You know, there's so many little like nuggets that perfectly catered to my taste as a kid, where I could like literally point and like be like, oh my god, it's that thing, you know. I'm pretty sure, admittedly, the first Jurassic Park movie I saw as a kid was probably the third one. with the velociraptors and the forest, and when the plane crashes, William H. Macy, all that. I don't know if I finished it, but I remember, like, the first time I ever consumed Jurassic Park material was, like, watching, like, at least the middle chunk of that movie, you know, with my mom or something. And then after that, I saw this movie, and, like, there's so many, like the Velociraptor props are, like, all over that little soundstage, like, prop room that they're in.
I think they're playing the Jurassic Park score, too, when they first arrive at Universal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. Yeah, it's so good. And, like, that scene, like, when they first get to the prop place, I was telling Victoria, I'm like, this is like the ultimate wish fulfillment for a kid, especially, like, if you're obsessed with movies, because, like, when you're watching this, you're just like, holy shit, like, this whole movie is really kind of like wish fulfillment, like, aside from getting your idea stolen, but, like, by the end, like, literally, like, having your, as a 14-year-old, like, having your, I don't know, story become like a movie is like the ultimate wish fulfillment, like having a premiere and, like, I don't know, having a whole production and, like, casting who you want to cast, like, that's, like, if you're a film kid, that's, like, cool as hell. I don't know. Like, it's just so cool.
Yeah. It's also, like, I'm still kind of convinced that this is how, like, movies are made, like, now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Marty Wolf is, like, Bob Iger or, like, Kevin Feige.
Yeah, I think honestly, he kind of has like a David Zaslav vibe a little bit.
Yeah, he's totally Zaslav.
Yeah, fuck David Zaslav. Yeah. All my homies hate David Zaslav.
An anti-David Zaslav podcast. He can go suck an egg.
He can get curb stomped. Like, honestly, like, get that fucker out of here. Like, just like, what the hell are we doing, guys? Like, God, just fuck that guy. But he, yeah, I don't know. With this, it's just, like, it's just so cool. And I think, you know, even going back to, like, because I feel like we always get ahead of ourselves when we talk about movies we really love. Like, the cast here is so good. It's so good. Like, Frankie Muniz and Amanda Bynes both were, like, at the peak of their, like, popularity at this time. Like, I think Malcolm in the Middle was, like, firmly at its, like, incline at this point. Like, it was really, like... Great show. I've seen
one
a lot of
the best shows ever.
So funny. That's a great show that's like, it's perfect for syndication because you can kind of drop in at any season. And as like all great sitcoms, you know the dynamic and it relatively doesn't change. Like the only time you can really pinpoint the timeline is by how old Dewey is, honestly. Because Frankie Muniz doesn't really age in it. Neither does the older brother, really. Like, so it's just like Dewey is the only like timeline thing in the show. But it's always great. And then, you know, like Amanda Bynes at the time. Like, I think this is before What a Girl Wants. Or maybe right around the same time.
I think definitely before. She seems a lot younger in here.
Because, well, this is 2002, right? I think that was 2003? If I'm not mistaken, maybe?
2004, maybe.
Okay, maybe. And then, yeah, I mean, just like all around, like it was kind of fun watching Victoria's reactions to everyone that was popping up. Because like when Donald Faison popped up, she was like, "Really?" And then like Sandra Oh, and like John Cho, even like there's a lot of people that you know pop. Oh, Taryn Killam, she had a big reaction to because she was like, "What?"
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's like just so many people. We'd be remiss not to mention Miss Amy Hill, Queen, popping up.
In every single Zillennial movie, my queen.
So good. Yeah, I really like Donald Faison in this movie as like the limo driver. He's so funny, and I love because that's like the first time it happens in the movie is when he tells them the story about how he faxed all of like his headshots to like every casting director in town and told them to like not hire him, and he just immediately is like, you know what, if you're trying to fuck this guy over, I'll drive you around, I'll do whatever you want, I'll be your bodyguard. Like, it's fine. And it's just like, it's so funny because like it goes back, this goes like past wish fulfillment, and it's like you start plotting against this guy yourself too. And like that wish fulfillment of like being driven around in a limo as a kid is like the coolest thing ever. That's why Home Alone 2 was so cool to me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like being Times Square with a giant pizza. in the backseat going to a toy store, forget about it. But especially like
it's
being
also
able to
like
Hollywood Boulevard. Come on, it's so cool.
Yeah, it's also like just very funny, like cultural criticism. And I'm not gonna give it too much props. It's literally written by Dan Schneider, but
yeah,
I think it's very good criticism of the film industry and bureaucracy in general, and how like assistants and like people, even like actors, are just treated like shit by producers and heads of studios and things like that. I think it's definitely like it's definitely far-fetched in every single capacity, but I think it's a pretty realistic portrayal of the suits in charge at studios.
Yeah, no, I think so too, because like yeah, I mean, especially like that's shown through the Kaylee, like, or not Kaylee, what am I saying, Monty, like his assistant. Because I do like her arc in this movie, where she goes like further down with Marty than you'd expect her to. Like at every turn you're kind of expecting her to like, you know, switch sides, but like very like naively she expects it to pay off for her, like even taking the blame at the party and saying that like instead of like you know throwing him under the bus, like rightfully, that he was the one that, you know, fucked up the schedule and everything and like lost the phone, like she's like, no, it was my bad, like I forgot to do it, like, you know, taking the blame for him. And yeah, it's like a very like realistic like depiction of that kind of stuff. And I wrote very jokingly in my letterbox, but also maybe not, that it's about cancel culture, because it's about like all the people that are like wronged in an industry turning against a person to get them taken out so they can get their love of making movies back. And like, is that inaccurate? I don't know, because like it really is just like a bunch of people speaking out against a guy and taking him out. Like, it's just kind of funny. Like Marty Wolf gets canceled in this movie.
Literally, like, that's how we should cancel people in the entertainment industry. Just like dye them blue, turn their hair orange,
which
fuck up their car.
Which, by the way, the blue, the pool scene is just it's incredible. The entire like 20-minute segment between like the pool, the car, the clown house, like it's so like. It's perfect. It's perfect.
I personally, like, I'm not even speaking out of any irony. I am so genuine when I say this. The Hungry Like the Wolf segment of the movie, I think, is one of the best movie scenes and one of the funniest movie scenes I've ever seen in my life. I am not exaggerating. Like, the second he's like, let's dance, Funny Bones, like, literally, or just the second he like wakes up in the morning, he's like karate chopping the monkey up until the psycho like score shower scene when he's like washing out the hair dye. I think that is a perfect scene. I think it is one of the best movie scenes I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I mean, even the way, like, because, I mean, again, this is, like, a movie that not only is, like, parodying, like, the behind-the-scenes nature, the you know, all that stuff, the suit and tie stuff and film production, but it's also very, like, it has a big love for movies. And that, like, the psycho thing is so funny, because even, like, the way, like, it films, like, the dye going down the drain is identical to how it happens in Psycho, which is just so funny. It's so good. Yeah, I mean, that entire sequence, I've had, I have a clip on my phone now saved, where it's just him going, hungry! Like, I'm gonna keep it forever. I don't think I'm ever gonna.
There's like a moment in it too when he's like, he like growls. He's like,
yeah. Yeah, no, so like, really honestly, good. It's a perfectly edited sequence because, I mean, everything that those little fucks are getting up to is, like, so diabolical. And, like, I honestly think, like, super gluing the earpiece is, like, one of the most evil things I've ever seen in a movie. It's genuine, like, funny games type shit. Like, it's Michael Haneke would, like, have a field day with these fuckers. But I think But it's just so funny and it's so satisfying. And even like you could just stop short of like doing him like blue, but like the orange hair dye is just like it's so fucking funny. I love when he's in the car after and he's like, I'm blue, and she's like, oh come on, like we all have bad days. And he's like, no, I'm blue. Like, literally. I think the hardest laugh I had, just because I like immense like satisfaction, was after he like leaves the birthday party where he gets like kicked in the nuts like a billion times. And the car is going like fucking like wild, and then they just pull the limo next to him. And he's like, you did this? And he's like, yeah, and it can like end any time. Just call my dad. And then like Amanda Bynes like holds up the instruction manual and then they just drive away. It's so good. It's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we discuss this a lot, but a lot of like family movies from this period of time into the 2010s, I feel like now if they're being made, they're just kind of like thrown on streaming or just not made at all. But like where they just throw like either a prestige actor or like an older actor or whatever into a movie just to have it like kids beat the shit out of them, or like, you know what I mean? Like war with grandpa, shit like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Surpasses that in every way, shape, or form.
100%. Yeah, 100%. I think so. Like, it really does. Like, because he actually commits to the bit. Like, he fully... Mm-hmm. Even aside, like, he doesn't even just commit to the bit. He makes it his own. Like, it's not even, like, bit at this point. It's a genuine performance piece. I think this movie is already pretty good without him, but he elevates it to, like, another level. Like, it's on an entirely different playing field because of his performance and like what he does with it. And just the character of Marty Wolf is so like larger than life. It's so good. This is very random, but I just feel the need to bring it up because I was kind of going down the Wikipedia rabbit hole. The lady who plays Frankie Muniz's mom in this movie is Stanley Tucci's sister. Because I saw the last name Tucci and I had to see what the relation was. And yeah, sure enough, she hasn't done like a lot of acting, but for some reason she was in Big Fat Liar. As she hasn't acted in a movie since 2005, and she's done less than 10 movies, but one of them.
What's her name?
Christine Tucci.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I guess she was like a. She's been like CSI and stuff like that, but yeah, she's. This is honestly, it seems like her biggest film role, from what it seems. Because like even like other movies where that are kind of notable, she's listed as like doctor or singer or you know like yeah. So this is like the only one of the only like named roles she has. I was gonna Jaleel White in this movie is really good. I love mm-hmm. that. Role, because that's another thing about like the commentary in the industry, it's kind of ahead of the curve in that, because I feel like it's one of the first depictions I've seen of like someone being revered for like nostalgia purposes but not being taken seriously for what they're trying to do, and just like kind of being beholden to an industry that's very thankless. I'm talking about Big Fat Liar. It's just kind of funny to use all these words, but like, but it's true. Like it's one of the first depictions I've seen of that. Like it's a commentary on that. And I feel like after this movie came out, there were so many other examples and parodies of that. But it's so funny. He's only in like 5 scenes, but they're all great.
I wrote a note. So him with the chicken, you know, when he's like on the red carpet and everyone's interviewing him, and then they're like, "Oh my God, it's the chicken!" And like. Everyone, like, leaves him to go, like, take pictures of the chicken. Do you think that's how Sandra Hüller feels about, like, Messy the dog?
Snoop Dogg. Yeah. I 100% think that. I saw that meme. It was like, my name's Sandra Hüller. So? Oh, my God, it's Messy. yeah, I think that's so exactly
fucking funny.
It's exactly how he feels, or how she feels. when there's, it was fun watching this with Katoria because the first scene, like, because it hard cuts to like him in the police car with the chicken, and Victoria just goes, "What?" Like, like, just like, because out of context, it makes it so confusing. And then, yeah, there's so many like moments, like, I was like watching her reaction to certain things because a lot of this is so like early 2000s. Like, it's so on. There's parts of it that are a little hard to watch because of how like dated it is, because it's a little bit like, oh man, like, this is not even bad. It's just like so of the times, and like the cuts and the musical cues, all that stuff is like, it's so abrasive, but it's like fun. The bit like with the grandma and Taryn Killam is like so fucking stupid, but it made me laugh so hard this time around, just because like of how blind she is and how she doesn't, she's like so senile. It's just so funny. Like, it's, I don't know. This movie,
that's another good Universal gag, is that there's an ET statue in the prop thing, and she said, "Oh my god, it's Grandma Pearl."
I like the bit of her having to hold Taryn Killam while he does like the crunches, and then he like gets her to like lift weights with her yarn, and she's like pumping like yarn. it's so funny. Yeah, for her, the like amount of screen time, she's so funny in this movie. There's also like some genuinely like interesting camera work in the like, especially beginning half of the movie. Like, when, I don't know how to describe it, but like when he's in the summer school for the first time, like, it's almost like a fisheye lens, like, meant to like show like how just like ugly everything is in the classroom and how sweaty it is. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's just like so like weird and something you wouldn't normally see in a studio family movie. And also like when he is sitting in the theater and he's watching the trailer for Big Fat Liar for the first time, and he's like literally like rising out of the seat and like coming closer to the screen as he realizes what it is. I don't know, there's just so many like weird like little choices made that I really admire, that I think go a long way, because it's actually kind of a visually interesting movie, believe it or not.
Yeah, the colors are also really good too. Like, it's just very like, I don't know, like, nothing looks and feels as comforting. And it's also like, because it takes place on a film set, like on like a film like lot and stuff, everything is practical. Every single thing in it is practical, and they even like make like a joke about like a stuntman like wants to do like a big jump, and they're like, no, he'll just animate it on his computer or whatever.
I did clock that on this go around with it, because it's like, I guess it's something I didn't really like take into account the first or the last time I watched it, but yeah, it is interesting to kind of see like, and this is like another thing where, you know, CGI was really on the rise in the early 2000s. Not that it wasn't already established, like, with Jurassic Park and stuff, and T2 and stuff. But, yeah, like, it really was climbing the ranks in the 2000s, to the point of where, like, the vibe that I get every time I, like, watch, like, a special feature, like, I watch, like, the Jurassic Park special features, and they were pretty cool with it, because they were just kind of like, okay, like, they clearly can't do everything with CGI, so we'll just put it where we can put it, but we'll always have our jobs. Although, if I watched the ILM documentary on Disney Plus, and they were like scared shitless about this stuff. So it was kind of like interesting to see the dichotomy there. But yeah, this is another thing where it's one of those first like satires and parodies where you see that like actual like fear of that, like losing your job to technology, presented in film, which I think is like kind of like, I mean, it's sad, but it's also like, I don't know. I like the way it portrays it in this movie. It's very simple. And I like how like all these like factions kind of come against him in one way or another, and they kind of like fight for their place in the industry, which I think is like endearing. Because at every turn, he's telling all these people that they don't matter. They can be replaced. They can be discarded. Like, Marty Wolf really does represent like the very worst of like the egotistical, like, by the numbers, you know, suit and tie isms of like Hollywood. And yeah, I don't know, to see it like that, it's nice.
And even just getting back at him, he makes racist jokes towards characters, and he basically says that Amy Hill's character is fat or whatever. And she eats a donut at the end after telling him off and being like, "We exposed you to everyone." She's like, "The whole press is here." It's like everyone kind of gets back at him in the end for being such, not even just a controlling person, but he just makes so many offhand comments that are just like, what the fuck? And you see them being affected by it. You see their reactions to it, being like, oh my God, clearly nobody likes him. And it's very nice that, what you said about how Donald Faison is like, I fucking hate this guy. Of course, I'll drive you guys around all over the city. It's very nice that, each and every character who has ever been wronged by him, somehow is participating and getting back at him in the end.
Yeah, especially at the end where you see the big the shot off the roof of how many people he's wronged. And I love when he's saying "Hey guys, where are you going?" And then they're all just walking away. They just want nothing to do with him. It's just I don't know, it is satisfying. As good as Paul Giamatti's performance is, you really are fuck that guy. But yeah, I mean honestly the third act of this movie is one of the craziest things I've ever seen. And the way that he just because you think honestly the little string of obstacles he goes through in the middle with the pool die and all that stuff, the car, the being kicked in the nuts by the kids, having his car fucking run over by the monster truck. He just L after L after L, and you think that's the worst of it, but man, the ending, again, like I said, watching Victoria's reaction as a first-time viewer was so funny, because she was truly oh my God, every time something new happened to him, she was like, this is crazy. The helicopter bit is just utterly ridiculous. It's so absurd. Everything with Julia White, just taking him and dropping off
He
him off,
drops
and
him in the desert,
yeah, he just throws him out of the car, or he refuses to slow down, and then Marty Wolf is like, I'll jump out, and he's like, do it then, and then he just jumps out of the car. Yeah, that's all, that's great. I knew Victoria recognized the. She kind of knew what was happening before it happened, because she grew up in California. And when she gets to the set on the backlot tour, as soon as he stepped onto that incline, she knew exactly that it was where the water comes out on the backlot tour, I guess. So she went, "Oh my God!" Because she knew exactly what was going to happen.
On the Backlot tour, they bring up Big Fat Liar in that scene, or they play a tiny clip of it, because have you ever been on the Backlot tour?
No, never.
It's literally amazing. But they like at each so there's a tour guide, and they do their spiel or whatever while they're driving, and then they'll stop at each individual thing and just press a button, and there'll be a little reel of the stuff that shot there or whatever. And I'm pretty sure Big Fat Liar's in that reel, or in the voiceover talking about it. But it's very funny. That's the only thing I think about. So many things have shot there. That's the only thing that I think about on that entire tram tour.
God, it's so good. I mean, I think that's and that's another thing, 'cause even I haven't been to the Hollywood one, but I do have nostalgia for even the fake one, 'cause they used to have one at MGM or back when it was MGM, now it's Hollywood Studios, but they used to have a backlot tour. Now, it of course there was no real productions going on back then, but it was still cool. The little show that they put on was still neat, because they'd have the water rushing in, and they'd have explosions, and they take you through the If I remember correctly, like the warehouses and where mm-hmm. they like preserve like Disney props and like film reels and stuff like that. So I always thought it was cool. And yeah, I just like, I love this movie. Like, I don't know, like having a reverence for that. Like it's because it's also like another nice vibe about this movie is like the whole like tram tour section of it. Like it's just fun. Yeah, I love that. Like the way it's like used against him, like the entire like third act is just him like having to go through like set to set to set, and like throughout the different genres. Like it's just so like, it's so good. And so creative too. Like the way it's like written is just so like snappy, and then like the way everyone individually get their own revenge on him, which is nice mm-hmm. because it's not like they all just like help out Frankie Muniz. Like they all get their own kind of revenge, and that's like satisfying. Mm-hmm. He just takes so many different L's in the course of like an hour. It's like, it's incredible.
Yeah.
I also think this movie has like a very realistic depiction of how like creativity with a child like operates, if that makes sense, because it's something, especially like at his age, I think he's like 14 in this movie. He doesn't even like inherently, he's not entirely aware of the fact that he's good at writing. He just does it. And mm-hmm. it's not something he's even fully aware of until he gets taken advantage of, or like, you know, it becomes useful to him. You know what I mean? And I just think that's like such an interesting like perspective on it, because it's something that he does like kind of reluctantly, but then he realizes he's like, oh, I'm like really great at this. And it doesn't like kind of, you know, overplay that message, but I think it's a great, like, it's also like a really nice message for kids. Like it's, you know, like creativity and, but also, I don't know, like it's a message about like trust and truth and everything. It's pretty simple, but, I don't know. It's both like a inspirational thing, but also a cautionary tale in equal measure. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, not to sound like too poetic over Big Fat Liar, but it's like technically like being a, like, I don't know, like being able to come up with lies is creative if you're like yeah. that, like, and it's just like using that creativity for good or evil. And when he like first shows up in Marty Wolf's limousine, like he like criticizes his lie and is like, that's not how you sell it. And he basically like comes up with a whole new story that he's like, that would sell it. And it's just funny because it's like, he's like, Marty Wolf is clearly not a writer, but he's only interested in lies that like would sell something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, 100%. Like it's, and it's interesting because like he at first kind of is like something to aspire to for him, because he is like a guy who's completely passing through life in a way that he thinks at first is like acceptable. And he is kind of like, wow, this guy's kind of cool. Like he, you know, he maybe has a point to make or whatever. And then, you know, throughout all that, he learns that it's not really a great way to live your life and not a great way to present yourself. And then he gets to see like all the damage it does. And, but also like, there's like a really nice moment, like, in the middle where, I always thought the scene was cheesy, but now I guess maybe just in my big age, I'm like finding like, I don't know, I'm finding pleasure in like these nicer, softer moments in kids' movies that I used to watch. And there's the line where he's telling Amanda Bynes about like why, because she's like, why are we even like doing this? It kind of feels like extreme. And he's like, it honestly just like really hurt me that my dad didn't believe me. And then he said he didn't trust me anymore. And it kind of felt like I wasn't his kid. Mm-hmm. And like it's like a really like small moment, but it's just kind of like, yeah, maybe it is like simply because it is like a very like, it's a big stretch to believe that this kid could go across the country without his parents knowing and do all this, obviously, but like to justify it with just like a very simple like feeling of like, I don't like disappointing my dad and I don't mm-hmm. like how that makes me feel is like, it's nice. Like it's like a nice, just like, it doesn't have to be any more than that. Sometimes mm-hmm. that's all it really is. And the movie doesn't really like lose sight of that, because that's his literal objective the entire time is like, I just want you to call my dad. I just want you to call my dad. And even at the end, he just wants him to admit to his parents what he did. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so nice, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, they never need to get too like melodramatic about it, anything. Like, it's just such a good, and even though it's so far-fetched, it really is just really simple. Like,
Yeah, 100%. It never overstays its welcome. It's very, very, very quick. It's like to the point. Every bit of it is funny. It's satisfying. I don't know. I mean, I hate to say they don't make them like this anymore, but they kind of don't make them like this anymore. Because I just feel like there's nothing like this, and as far as like family media goes, that A, first of all, let's a prestige actor just have a performance that can be remembered. But let alone just like, I don't know, it feels like it's simultaneously a kid's movie, but also a real movie at the same time. Like, clearly, because like, I'm not watching this like 5 times in my 20s for no reason. Like, there's a reason why I'm coming back to it. It's not just nostalgia, it's the fact that I actually enjoy it and I find like joy and I don't know, his performance. I think it's so wacky and comforting and amusing to me that I'll never like not enjoy it.
Yeah. I literally like don't know. I want to watch this all the time.
Yeah,
Like
literally all the time.
I'm very excited to show my children this. I think it'll hold up. I can't wait to bring them on the Universal Tram Tour and say, remember this from the film Big Fat Liar.
From the Big Fat Liar. They should call it the Big Fat Liar Tram Tour, honestly, because so I can hit all the same beats. Yeah, I think it is really funny to see like just all these people like before they're kind of like right at the base of like their popularity. Like so many actors in this movie are like just like right place, right time. Like this is kind of before Paul Giamatti even like fully exploded. Like I'm trying to look at his film history prior to this, and like he did good work before this, don't get me wrong. Like he was in Saving Private Ryan, he was in like Truman Show, he was in he was like here and there, but it was mostly supporting performances, you know what I mean? And to see him like do this, but it's before he got like an Oscar nom for like Sideways, or American Splendor, and like there's so many other movies that he did like directly after this that it's funny that he was able to do this like right before exploding like this. And same thing for like Frankie Muniz and Amanda Bynes. Like everyone is just like at the peak or the incline of their popularity. So it's like seeing so many like good performers in their prime.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that like I'm just trying to think, sorry.
It's okay.
It really is just like such a moment that I fear we'll never get back again of like you said, like so many actors like in their prime. I can't think of anything else that is on this level, and maybe it's just because we're looking back on this in retrospect and like knowing where these people either ended up or what they ended up doing in their careers or whatever. But yeah, this is just such a specific vibe and such a specific all around like thing.
Yeah, I think another like funny thing about it, I'm pretty sure we talked about this the very first time we talked about this movie, but the sequel that came out, which I totally forgot about it, Bigger, Fatter, Liar, which is just like funny because they get absolutely no body of note for it. It's one of those classic like another Cinderella story or like Legally Blondes. Or like something along that lines, or this even looks cheaper than those, if I'm being honest. But this is more like Jingle All the Way too, with like Larry the Cable Guy type shit. But from what because I was reading into it the other night after we finished watching it, and if I'm not mistaken, it's about this guy. It's the same plot where they have like it's some like his the bad guy's last name is Wolf, and the main kid's name is Shepherd, but there's no relation to either character. But instead, this guy is a video game developer, and he steals his idea for a video game. But it's like the same movie, just with a video game, which entirely negates the point of like what Big Fat Liar is. Never seen it, but it's just like funny because like to read through it because it's like, how did you misunderstand what made this movie good?
For some reason, I feel like I've seen that movie, and I don't remember where or why or anything about it, but I feel like I've watched it either, like, at a party or something. Like, I have seen that movie, I think.
I think I've seen scenes from it, because I think a YouTuber, and I could not tell you, I don't know if it's, like, Eddie Burback or what, like, someone that I follow... I think did a like analysis on it or something. I'm trying to find it right. Oh, yep, it was Eddie Burback. I'm looking at it right now. So I'll have to watch that again because there's a lot of like movies that I haven't like fully seen, but I've seen parts of like through Eddie Burback. Drew Gooden, like people like that, pretty much it, Eric Stripler, like those kind of people. Like I've seen a lot of movies I wouldn't normally see that way, or at least the excerpts of certain movies. But yeah, I'll probably watch that again. But yeah, it's so funny that they tried to like do a cash grab sequel to this movie. Sean Levy in 2022 said he's always wanted to do a direct sequel to Big Fat Liar, stating that the plot would include a Marty Wolf revenge story. The filmmaker referenced the revitalized Real Steel franchise. Okay, now who cares? He said that in comparison to his other movies, Real Steel, that Hugh Jackman like robot movie, he said that's getting a sequel. He's like, so maybe there's hope for Big Fat Liar. Which I think is like keep the hope alive, man. Like I'm there for it. The soundtrack is crazy. I'm looking at the track list now. We got Smash Mouth, Fatboy Slim, Baha Men, Eiffel 65.
Really great soundtrack.
Yeah, great soundtrack. Honestly, everything is just so 2002. I love it. This is the most 2002 thing I've ever read. The DVD for this movie contains an unlockable cheat code for Spyro 2 Season of the Flame that turns the Spyro dragon blue, as seen in one of Jason's pranks on Marty.
What the fuck?
I love this era so much. I love it so much. Because just today I was thinking about, don't ask me why I was thinking about this, because it just was like one of those like during work thoughts, but I was like, I miss video game tie-ins to movies. Like I miss that entirely.
Was there a video game for this?
No, there wasn't, but just that made me think about it again. When we did the Napoleon Dynamite episode, I started thinking about how there was weirdly a video game tie-in for that. You can kind of do one for any movie. The one I was most shocked by was the Bratz 2007 game when we did that episode, finding out that had a tie-in. I feel like there's a lot around this era that had like a Nintendo DS or Game Boy tie-in. I think this may have been a little too early. Because it would have been like a PS1 or PS2. I guess it would have been PS2 by that point.
Like Game Boy Advance SP.
Yeah, but what would you even do, honestly? Just like fuck with Marty Wolf?
Yeah, like go down the planner and like perform tasks.
You know, you're valid. I remember when I saw this movie, I really wanted one of those I guess it's a cell phone, but I just wanted, a planner. When I say I wanted a planner, I just wanted, a stylus. I just wanted to, check box things. I thought that was cool. Going off that scene where she, gets it from the assistant and she's like, the Marty Wolf pictures, please hold. I totally forgot that she is like, how do you spell Soderbergh? So fucking funny. Mr. Sandler, okay. So good.
Yeah,
no, it's perfect. I wouldn't have it any other way. It's every time I revisit it, it's exactly what I needed to be at this point in my life. And I'll never get tired of it, I don't think.
Yeah. Me too.
Oh wait, we gotta do this. Roger Ebert gave it 3 out of 4 stars and called it a surprisingly entertaining movie, ideal for younger kids, and not painful for parents.
Exactly. He's correct.
He gave it 2 thumbs up.
And they also reference him in it, which is funny, so.
Yeah. Although, I will say, this only has a 45% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is so fake. It's so fake.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah, no, there's, like, nothing bad about this movie at all.
No.
No,
I don't think I've ever met a person that doesn't like this movie.
No, it's so fun. I mean, and that's the thing about it, is that I feel like from this era, like, there's, like, a impulse to give everything that was a kid's movie, like, a bad rating. Because, like, this is not, like, a bad movie in any regard. Even if you don't, like, love it, like, you can't even tell me that it's, like, bad. You know, it's, like, completely well-staged, well-written, well-acted, well-everything. Like, everything about it is good. I like that there's a post-credit scene just dedicated to him getting kicked in the balls. That's funny. And also paying off the, I don't know, the subplot with him and the monster truck guy. A little side gag that I always find funny is that his son is wearing the same tank top that he is. And that's, and he also has, like, the spiked, like, Guy Fieri hair. that'll always be funny to me.
I like the old lady that, like,
oh,
he, like, cuts her off or something. Yeah. She's like, eat my bloomers, blue boy.
Yeah, and the first time, yeah, because she runs into him twice. The first time she says, up yours, blue boy. And then,
yeah.
And then, like, the second time, he's like, oh, that's really lovely coming from a woman of your age. And it's so funny. Yeah, it's great. There's, like, a bit. I feel like I learn a different gag every time I watch this movie, but maybe it's because I had subtitles on this time. But when he's getting off the bus to go to the premiere of the chicken movie, when he's, like, getting off the bus, like, the tourists that are getting on the bus, they're like, don't look him in the eyes. And they're I've never noticed
there's
that.
There's, like, a scared child and, like, a mom who's like, don't look at him.
Yeah. I don't know why, because it's very quiet almost. Like, but the subtitles, like, completely made me laugh at it this time. Because I've never noticed that before. It's such a funny gag. Yeah, I don't know. Everything about it, just so funny. Yeah. Great movie. And you know what, Mr. Giamatti, you may not win the Oscar on Sunday, but for us at Z Canon, you'll forever have an Oscar as producer Marty Wolf.
Yeah. I fully, like, I want him to win. I think he is the best performance out of that crew. I know he won't. I know that Oppie's gonna win, but, like, damn.
Yeah, I think, it's like Cillian Murphy, Paul Giamatti, who's the other three? Rust, I like Coleman Domingo, Bradley Cooper, and who else? Who's the fifth one?
Bradley Cooper. Is Mark Ruffalo supporting?
Yeah, he's supporting it. Jeffrey Wright is who I was thinking of for American
Fiction. Oh, yeah, he's great too, but, like, yeah. Paul Giamatti's my favorite performance out of that entire.
I will say I would probably still give it to Cillian myself, but Paul Giamatti, if he won, I would, like, not at all.
I will upset. Literally shit myself. Like,
yeah, I'd be so happy, because that's a performance that, and he's always consistently great, but in that movie, he just, like, bears his soul fully. It's a beautiful movie, beautiful performance. Mm-hmm. He does so much, like, face acting and eye acting in that movie. Like that scene where he, realizes that his, like, love interest is seeing somebody or is married, and that the, like, look he gives at the camera is just, like, the most, like, sad thing I've ever seen in my life. Also, on the flip side, the fact that Dominic Sessa wasn't nominated for Best Supporting Actor, what are we doing? He was so great in that movie. One of the best.
The shot of him flying through the air after, like, jumping over that thing is, like, my favorite reaction image, because you don't know what kind of emotion it's conveying, but it just exists as is, him flying in the air upside down.
His little scream. So good. The fact that that's his first performance is like, wow. I love that movie. That was a great movie. I really, really love that. I saw it like 3 times and I still can't get enough of it. Although I will say Divine Joy Randolph is probably going to win. And incredibly well deserved. She's fantastic. Yeah. In that movie. This is a pro holdover spot. We like the holdovers.
Yeah.
This is a I always like when we can try to tie it into the Oscars somehow, some way. So I hope whatever is a best picture or best actor or best actress or whatever runner next year, I hope they have a good zillennial selection to choose from, because I want to keep this trend going. Well, if somebody tries again,
if somebody next year, tries a third time.
Okay, you know what's funny? This is totally gonna give it away. The first time he did it, I was actually fully on board with it. I was like, yeah, that was a great movie.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I liked this one a lot too. But me too. I just think it's like,
I liked it.
It's a tragic arc of him just trying.
I'm just gonna say the actor is Bradley Cooper. We're not gonna give away what the movie is that he that we may cover, but like that like quote
that we're going about, to like, cover.
But like that he that quote, he's like, I don't know if I love my kid. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude?
No, it was out of context. And
no,
he was talking...
I read the context. It's worse. It's worse.
It's the kind of thing where like it's like. I mean, like, obviously, like, he wasn't the one that was pregnant, but, like, postpartum depression and stuff, like, it's, like, you can discuss stuff like that with your friends and stuff, but it's, like, that's public, and your kid will see that eventually. Like, I, clearly, like, it's such, like, a huge life change, like, I'm just gonna, like, go into, like, whatever, like, it's very valid to like feel that way, and nobody ever talks about it, and it extremely fucks up your mental health, like when you have a massive life change like that. But
yeah,
you should probably not talk about it publicly. Like, it, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it kind of feels like he's had no social media training a little bit. It's kind of funny. I get the concept like entirely. It's just like the way he words it is so, like, because he mentions, like, if a burglar breaks in the house, am I grabbing the gun? Am I defending you? And I'm like, what are you talking about, man? I'm like, shut up. Like, even if you, like, to your core question and believe that, you don't say it in a fucking Vanity Fair
interview. No, yeah.
Like, you don't say that. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's just, it's silly. I like him. I actually do like him. And I liked Maestro. It's just,
It's just very weird, though, like, he became, which, like, I guess we're low-key kind of doing that, but, like, it's weird that he became, like, the one to, like, make fun of. Like, I saw a tweet that was, like, so when did we all decide to, like, clown on him? Because, like, he never really did anything.
Like, no, and I, the thing is, I don't even, like, I still like him, and I still like, I still like the movie. I love A Star Is Born. I love A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
I think perfect, Maestro... Literally. I think Maestro gets a little lost in the sauce with the technical components, that it loses a bit of its like narrative and emotion, which is something that I don't think A Star Is Born has an issue with. But even so, it is still a very impressive like feat altogether. Like, it's still like it's good.
I think it's an incredibly directed movie. I think it is incredible, and I think that he should not have acted in it. Because I did not like his acting performance, but I thought that it was, like, a perfectly directed movie.
I thought he was, like, good. It's just, it kind of did... that's the thing, is, like, you can find a performance good, but still feel like there's an element of it that feels a little... not authentic. Like, it's just not authentic. It's just kind of, like, a little bit... There's something there that just feels a little too...
Feels like a vanity project. Which I think is why people are clowning on him.
I mean, even if it's a vanity project, I guess what I'm getting at is that, like, there's something when you can tell that it's... When it's so much of a performance that there's no, like, truth, there's no humanity, it feels too much like acting. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, I feel that way, honestly, a lot when it comes to some of these Oscar. Not even this year, but, like, in previous years, like, with, like, nominees. I remember, like, the one time I really thought that was, like, the Darkest Hour with Gary Oldman. I just was like, oh, okay. Like, we're just, we're doing the whole thing. Okay. What's his name is Freddie Mercury was really like that. Not to put Bradley Cooper in that category. I think he gives a much better performance, but it's in the same vein. It's the same like genre of performance.
Very annoying that like a biopic is almost like a guaranteed win for an Oscar.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this year definitely won't happen because it's probably going to go to Killian, but I do think.
Yeah, that's a biopic.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, the thing is, though, Killian, I forgot. But, yeah, Killian, though, I give that the pass because it's not a showy performance at all. It's just genuinely, like, an incredible performance. Like, he doesn't get under, like, loads of makeup. He doesn't even transform at all. Like, he just acts, and it's incredible. And also, the same thing you could say about, like, Giamatti's narrative about, like, just kind of always being there but never being like the front runner. I think the same can be said about Killian because he's just incredible in every supporting performance he does his entire life. And then in Oppie, he just like completely, he's like, okay, like just let me lay it all out and carry the entire movie. And he does a tremendous job with it. So I'm rooting for both my boys. As a Red Eye stan and as a Big Fat Liar stan, I'm rooting for my boys.
Oh, we gotta cover Red Eye.
Red Eye is so good.
I love Red Eye. It's so good.
It's great. He was talking a bit of shit about Red Eye during the press tour. Well, no, he wasn't talking shit. He just, someone asked him about it. He's like, I think it's a good B movie, but I wouldn't call it a good movie. And I'm like, Killian, I disagree with you. It is a good movie. Wes Craven is the man. He knows what he's doing. The simple pleasures of contained one setting suspense will never diminish.
80-minute movies.
God, what a good movie. I don't love the ending, but I do like everything. At the airport or on the plane, I think is great. So good.
I love the clip that like everybody always posts where he's just like so like cunty. He's like, "Or I'm gonna kill your dad."
He's so good. He's so good in this movie. I mean, even like in the Dark Knight trilogy, like there's so many like little like quirks that he does as Scarecrow that I'm like, okay, all right, sir, all right, like. All right. Well, I don't know. Any last Oscar thoughts you want to give or Big Fat Liar thoughts?
I'm trying to think of the other nominees this year. Good luck to all the nominees. We're rooting for most of you.
Honestly, I will say this year with Best Picture, I didn't see one I disliked. I thought they were all good.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't... I didn't love Oppenheimer or Anatomy of a Fall, but I would say, like, every movie this year that's nominated is really good.
Yeah, I thought, let me see. I really liked Oppenheimer. I loved Holdovers. I loved Killers was great. Past Lives was great. All that stuff. Son of Interest was great.
Scary.
Incredibly draining.
So good, it was scary.
Yeah. Yeah, my least favorite is probably like Maestro and Anatomy of a Fall, but I liked both of those. American Fiction was great, I thought. It's a very good year. Very good year. I think we're very lucky that we didn't have a stinker because so often we have like one or two. I remember that year that they did like Bohemian Rhapsody, Green Book, and Vice in one category. And it was like, Jesus Christ, what are we doing?
Yeah.
So yeah, every time we get a year like this, I have to count my blessings a little bit.
Yeah, even like the technical categories that are like the one-off like nominations, like fucking Godzilla got nominated. We got some Mission Impossible nominations. We got John Williams' score for Indiana Jones, which is, I think he said his last score, and it's, like, amazing. Yeah. Like, literally, in retrospect, like, 2023 was a fucking amazing year for movies, and I have no idea how it's going to be, like, topped by this year.
It won't be. With the strikes, it just won't be. But the second that I lost faith in that, when the Jordan Peele got pushed to next year, I was like, all right, it's over. Yeah. Although Furiosa, that's my hope.
Yes. I'm not even joking. Whenever that trailer comes on in Dolby or IMAX, like, I uncontrollably, like, my eyes, like, I have tears. Like, yeah, just like, feeling, like, the impact of the sound in the seats, like, I start tearing up. Because...
So good.
Yeah. I feel like lately, like, I've been getting, like, really, like, emotional at movies. And just, like, the spectacle of going to the movies. I don't know what it is. But literally, like, I've just been getting, like, chills at the movies. And I don't know if it's because I've been seeing things in, like, mostly premium formats lately, because there's so many, like, re-releases and stuff. But,
right.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, my God. Like, I didn't even love Tenet. And I saw it for the first time in IMAX. And, like, every time, like, the aspect ratio shipped, I was like, oh, my God. Like,
yeah, it's so cool.
Like, yeah. Like, yeah, every time I see the Furiosa trailer, I just fucking, I'm gone. I'm done.
Furiosa's, like, I was looking at, like, the remaining movies this year. And there's, like, plenty of movies I'm looking forward to. But my two for the year are Furiosa and Nosferatu, because I really like Eggers a lot. Everything he does.
You're an egghead. Straight.
I am an egghead. Everything he makes, I have, like, some kind of response to. But and that just sounds right up my alley. Robert Eggers' Nosferatu movie. But, you know, Furiosa, that's kind of my end game. Like, even before Dune came out, that was my most anticipated of the year, because I've been waiting almost 10 years at this point for a Fury Road follow-up, and I couldn't be more happy that I'm finally getting it. As someone that saw Fury Road, like, 7 times in theaters in 2015, like, this is our moment.
Listen, they better re-release that shit in IMAX before that movie comes out, because I feel like Warner Brothers has been doing that lately. Yeah,
they have. They have.
They better do that. They're literally re-releasing The Matrix and Dolby for, like, one night again, I think.
Yeah, Regal's doing it. I bought my tickets for... It's a little bit after. It's on April 3rd. But, yeah, I bought it for Regal. Although, I saw it when they re-released it in IMAX before Resurrections came out. So this will be my second time seeing it in theaters. But I'll never pass up an opportunity to see The Matrix in theaters.
Yeah.
It seems like they're going to do a lot this year, because I read that they were doing Interstellar and, like, because that'll be 10 years old this year.
Wait, for real? They're going to re-release that? I've never seen that.
It was just a rumor, but it's 10-year anniversary, Christopher Nolan. They're doing so many, like, IMAX screenings, lack of content this year. Like, just so much, like, so many signs point to it. Their TikTok account, the IMAX one, they keep teasing it, because every time there's a comment about it, they make a video about it. They're like, we can't say anything. I think it's going to happen. Like, it's probably going to happen. I can't imagine it doesn't. It would be a big missed opportunity if it doesn't.
Yeah. IMAX is what I'm trying to say.
Listen, I saw the movie 7 times in theaters. One time I saw it when they re-released it in black and white with the golden chrome version or something.
I forgot about that.
That was so cool. And like half of those viewings were in IMAX when I went to go see it. I saw like 3 times in IMAX, one of which was the black and white version. It's so fucking good. That's like my favorite. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. So to say I'm excited for Furiosa is an understatement. I will be there. I'll have my like chain, like iron, like jaw trapped, like face mask ready to go with the chain on, with the blood vessels in my veins. Like, I don't know. I can't fucking wait. I'm ready to go.
Did you see that the picture that Chris Hemsworth posted today?
I did.
Of him on the motorcycle.
I giggle a little bit every time it cuts to him in the trailer, and he has like the big prosthetic nose, and I'm like, yes.
He's like, lady and gentleman.
The line where he's like, do you have what it takes to make it epic? I'm like, ugh. Yeah. Like, come here. Like, come on. It's too far. It's only 2 months away. Let's go.
It's so valid to say epic in that context. Like, I'll let them have it. Like, dead serious epic. Like, not even ironic. Like,
that's what cinema's about. That's what two things cinema is about: Big Fat Liar and Furiosa.
Talk about some epic movies.
God. Well, on that note, I hope you guys enjoyed our Oscar talk. We had to get it out. You can follow me on Twitter, I guess. Yeah, Adam_ not Sandler. My website, cinesoup.com. I wrote a review for Dune, probably the longest review I've ever written in my life, actually. I just didn't even intend for that to happen. I just typed it, and kind of like one Jason Shepard. I just wrote it and it came out. Other podcast, Prestige Content, where we did a spoiler review for Dune. I kind of tried to form coherent thoughts. I was really blown away by it, so I tried to put it to words, but I still feel like I stumbled a bit because I was just kind of perplexed and like amazed by the experience that I had with it. Mm-hmm. And also we recapped The Bachelor, so you know, hey, what else? Yeah, otherwise, as for that other Oscar movie we were teasing, stay tuned, I guess.
Yeah, very excited about that. You can follow me on Twitter at Garlic Emoji. You can follow us on Twitter at Zillennial Canon, on Instagram at Zillennial Canon. Give us some ratings and some reviews and enjoy the Oscars. Good luck, Paul Giamatti.
Yes, best of luck, sir. And Marty Will Pictures, please hold.
Bye.